So as I mentioned before, today the church officially observes Reign of Christ Sunday, or more traditionally, Christ the King Sunday. As we wrap up the Christian year this Sunday on the threshold of Advent and the new Christian year, which officially begins again next Sunday, this is one of those rare times in the liturgical calendar when Easter and Christmas, the cross and the incarnation, come together. That's why, as we prepare for the story of a vulnerable child born into a chaotic and oppressive world, the one hailed by angels, shepherds, and philosophers at his birth, we now get the story of the one who is betrayed, condemned, and abandoned at his death, the one mocked and crucified as the so-called King of the Jews. What kind of king dies pathetically on a cross? What kind of king can't even save himself? This juxtaposition, this narrative, liturgical juxtaposition of Jesus' birth and death, as the great womanist theologian Dolores Williams articulated so well, is key to understanding the nature of the divine kingdom. The kingdom Jesus points to as much in his birth and in his life as in his death, the very kingdom of God, is a reversal and a rejection of the earthly kingdom of Caesar. Instead of domination, it's marked by servanthood. Instead of hierarchy, community. Instead of competition, cooperation. Instead of narcissism, humility. Instead of mockery, kindness. Instead of cruelty, mercy. Instead of fear, love. That's why we at Calvary often refer to God's kingdom as God's kindom, emphasizing precisely how it's different from the kingdoms of this world. The juxtaposition of Jesus' humble birth with his torturous death drives that point home. Even on the cross, the very symbol of imperial domination and terror, the kingdom of God transcends. Love has the last word. God is present and active. Love is present and active, even in and through what by most every account would seem to be God forsaken. As one commentary suggests, where God's reign is mocked and Caesar's reign seems triumphant, there, precisely there, God reigns. And that imperial inscription above Jesus' head, King of the Jews, the one meant to taunt, intimidate, and demean, there, precisely there, God's kingship is declared. The divine kinship, the divine kingdom of love, is declared in the least likely of places. God makes God's presence felt even in apparently God-forsaken places. In a manger, say, at the mercy of strangers. On a cross, mocked by strangers who have lost their imagination, as Pastor John talked about last week, stuck in the belief, or at least the resignation, that there could be no other kingdom than Caesar's. In the face of seemingly God-forsaken circumstances, the psalmist reflects in our reading this morning, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. Though the earth should change, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. The nations are in an uproar. The kingdoms totter. God utters God's voice. The earth melts. God makes wars cease to the end of the earth. God breaks the bow and shatters the spear. God burns the shields with fire. And then this: be still and know that I am God. Be still. in the midst of uproarious nations and tottering kingdoms, in the midst of endless wars and violence, in the midst of a climate-changing earth and trembling mountains, in the midst of chaotic frenzy and overwhelming fear, even in the midst of capitalist busyness and near constant activity, even now on the verge of a season which can so easily spin us off-center if we let it. Be still. Be still. Be still. Be still. Be still and know that I am God. I am a firm believer in panentheism, the theological notion that God is in all living things and yet transcends all living things. The divine mystery, the divine spirit is ever present both within and beyond us. Where can I go from your spirit, the psalmist declares elsewhere? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning, settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you. The God of Jacob, the God of our ancestors, is indeed our refuge, even if we sometimes run from that refuge. We take comfort in trusting that God is present no matter what. God is with us. God pursues us with goodness and mercy in the language of Psalm 23. God finds us no matter what, no matter where we are, always, always. But in the midst of all that relentlessly rages on in our lives and in the world around us, within the kingdoms of this world, and within the values of those kingdoms, the psalmist reminds us that if we want to find God, if we want to know God, know who God is, and know that God is, we need only start by being still. Slowing down, stopping enough to listen for the whisper of God, the still, small voice that Elijah heard on the mountain at the very end of his proverbial rope, afraid for his life, literally pleading that he might die. Most of you, if not all of you, all of us know something of what that feels like. I have to say, I've only come close to that feeling in my bouts with depression through my adult life. For Elijah and for all of us, the voice found not in the great wind that was splitting mountains and breaking rocks, not in the earthquake and not in the fire, but in the sound of sheer silence. Listen, listen for the life-giving voice of God within you that can so easily, too easily, be drowned out by all the voices around you. I think of Francis as someone who faithfully listened for and heard that voice within him. Within himself, the divine voice that affirmed and reaffirmed his inherent worth, his inherent belovedness in the midst of so many cruel voices in this world, even in his own family, that told him otherwise. The voice that nurtured his love for himself, that matched his sincere and gentle love and concern for others. That is the Francis I remember. Be still. Be still and know that I am God. The Quaker theologian and educator Parker Palmer describes the soul as a wild animal. He writes that the soul is tough, resilient, resourceful, savvy, and self-sufficient. It knows how to survive in hard places. But he also suggests that our souls are shy. Just like a wild animal, he goes on, it seeks safety in the dense underbrush, especially when other people are around. If we want to see a wild animal, we know the last thing we should do is go crashing through the woods, yelling for it to come out. But if we will walk quietly into the woods, sit patiently at the base of a tree, breathe with the earth, and fade into our surroundings, the wild creature we seek might put in an appearance. That wild creature, the soul within each of us, is the divine presence within each of us, the still, small, life-giving voice of God that whispers to us, constantly, but that we only hear when we are still enough, quiet enough, to discern it in the midst of all the other voices that scream and shout for our attention. It turns out, as Jesus reminds us again and again, that the kingdom of God is within us, each of us, all of us. But the kingdom of God only comes when we learn to be still, when we slow down and make the time and space necessary to actually listen, to pay attention, to know the God that is, to be reminded who God is, and so who and whose we are. Most of you know that I love the Eagles. And by the Eagles, I mean the band, not the football team. It's not that I hate the Eagles, I'm just saying. Theirs were the first songs I learned to play on the guitar when I was a kid, whose basic voice range more or less fit my own, though I have to say less and less so as I and my voice get older. They put out a song about 20 years ago called Learn to Be Still. A few of those verses from that song came back to me as I reflected on Psalm 46 this week. Just another day in paradise, as you stumble to your bed, give anything to silence those voices ringing in your head. We are like sheep without a shepherd. We don't know how to be alone, so we wander around this desert, wind up following the wrong God's home. And then this. There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you to awaken. Someday you will learn to be still. Be still and know that I am God. I want to close this morning with a poem from Pablo Neruda, translated from his native Spanish. Pablo, a native of Chile, a poem I've shared before as a way to pray ourselves into worship. It goes like this. Now we will keep count to 12, and we will keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would look at his hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars with gas, wars with fire, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk about with their brothers in the shade, doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it is about. I want no truck with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt the sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us, as when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive. Now I'll count up to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11, 12. Be still and know that I am God. May it be so.